Hey everyone, Josh here. Before this week's episode, we had a little bit of a technical snafu where I recorded 20 minutes of material and the internet cut out and we recorded another 10. I merged it together as best I could, but if you're listening to it and there's some weirdness there at around minute 20, you know what's going on. Other than that, had a fascinating conversation, and with that, I'll just let the tape speak for itself. Thanks again. Hello again. This is Josh Carr at The Real Angle, and we're back again this week with Kim Lockridge. Kim, how are you doing today?
I'm doing so good, Josh. Thanks for having me back on the show. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
Great. Thank you. And to remind everybody who may or may not have tuned in last week we talked a lot about bonus depreciation and related topics. This week, we're going to talk a little bit about energy efficiency, or to be more accurate, tax credits and tax deductions, which help you as a developer pay less in taxes effectively. Specifically, we're going to get into the tax code. So I guess the best place to start this conversation, I would think, would just be talk a little bit about the history of some of the things we're going to talk about. And I think of it, and I think you do too, as sort of the pre-Inflation Reduction Act rules and the post-Inflation Reduction Act rules. But why don't we start with just the basics here? What are the two major things that people use, and kind of what's the history behind them?
Yeah. So Josh, thanks a lot for asking the question. And this gets a little bit convoluted and confusing. So we'll kind of do a really good job of separating those in our conversation today. And I want to preface that with the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act that came out, it has a lot of pieces to it and components. And really today's conversation is going to be focused on two things. We'll separate it into two different categories. One is the 179D. It's a tax code, but that's what they're going by. And then the other one is the 45L. Now, I know there's 45K and there's all kinds of other tax deductions, but these are the two. The 45L and the 179D are the ones we're going to focus on heavily today just because of time constraints. But, starting out in 2005, there was the Energy Policy Act of 2005, and this started the beginning of 2006. All right. Okay. So the Energy Policy Act came out, and it was basically, stating that, hey, we're going to bring all of our government buildings up to code. You know, we're going to be, presenting all of these incentives if you were to buy or build a building that is energy efficient and meets these criteria.
Can I make one comment just quick? Energy Policy Act 2005. So who was president at the time?
Oh, that's a great question. You might know better than I would. I know that Obama made some changes.
Right. But let's go back in time, right? So Biden, 16 to 20, right?
16 to 20.
Obama, yep. 08 to 16.
Yep, so we had George Bush in there.
We're going back to W, correct?
Yep.
Right? And the reason I'm mentioning that, and it's just a side point, but I think it gets back to a comment we had earlier about that energy policy, that this is a reoccurring bipartisan conversation. And I just wanted to sort of flesh that out because, I mean, not to get too off path here, but, Biden's been pushing the whole Inflation Reduction Act as like a major thing of this administration. But like people, both sides of the aisle have been talking about energy policy a lot. I just wanted to get that out of the way. So this was Bush administration, Energy Policy Act gets in, and okay, so back to you now that I sort of got that little political comment out of the way.
Yeah, and it is bipartisan because there is a whole push in our country to become energy independent. That's been around for, probably since this 2005. There have been talks about it before that, but actually Bush put these and enacted them. And then in Obama's era, he enhanced it. I think it was Obama that actually came out and said all government buildings, and if I remember correctly, all government buildings need to be brought up to green standards by 2015. And this was sometime 2010, maybe, that he announced this and had given him, a good 4 or 5 years. I don't remember exactly the dates, but that kind of shows that you have bipartisan support, right, all along. And so it isn't just one thing or the other. There is a true connection across both sides that says, hey, we want to be energy independent. The US is the biggest user of energy in the entire world. Right. So we have all these other countries looking at the US going, you big bad, you know, you're ruining our world and our ozone layer,
et cetera. And either way, we all, you know, every dollar they save in electricity is a dollar in theory we pay less in taxes. So it's, right. You know, it's a good thing. So they passed this law, and this basically created 179D and 45L. Those are like the two big programs.
So yeah, that's when they were born. That's
which
correct.
Which one do you want to start with? 179?
Yeah, let's start with 179D.
Cool.
So 179D is a tax deduction. Okay. That was initially started if you build a building or you make substantial improvements specifically to the HVAC, the lighting, interior lighting, or the building envelope, you know, building envelope, meaning that shell, the windows,
insulation,
the doors, insulation, right? Those types of things. So the envelope, the HVAC, and the lighting. Then you could be eligible for up to $1.80 per square foot as an additional tax deduction. This is above and beyond COSEG. So remember COSEG, we were talking about shifting those assets from a 39-year property into, you know, 1 or 5 or 7 or 15 buckets. This would actually essentially work like bonus depreciation. This was well before we had 100% bonus, right? So this was actually the first kind of form of bonus depreciation with another term. But essentially up to $1.80 per square foot, you could take as a tax deduction, and you're shifting those assets from a 39-year class life into a 1-year class life. You're taking an immediate deduction on it. Now this was for properties that were commercial buildings.
Okay.
As mentioned, new construction or substantial rehab for those three sections. And, you know, it didn't really have any criteria on that as far as commercial, but they had also added in there for multifamily, but there was a criteria for the multifamily side that it had to be 4 floors or more. So it was a larger apartment building you could get 179D for, and not just your standard garden style apartment. It had to be bigger than that. So sure. 4 floors or more if it was multifamily, but really any commercial building.
Got it. I mean, which is a lot of what, I mean, residential, a lot of stuff is 4 stories of living space over a story of concrete podium. I mean, so that's not an uncommon building type. And when, right. So you're still getting the same total amount of depreciation. It's just some of the depreciation is being shifted to right now, basically.
That's correct. Yep. Cool. You're just getting it right now. Yep. Okay. So that was kind of the criteria. This has been around. It was a temporary tax bill for, I think, 2 years. It was going to expire in 2008. They brought it back to expire in 2010. Then they were expiring again. They brought it back in 2011. And because there was this give and take, this up and down, it's here, it's not here, it's expired, it's not, nobody really paid attention to it for a long time. We were really one of the only ones in the market that had picked this up in 2006 when it came to fruition.
Because you can't plan for it. I mean, as a developer, if I'm going to architects and construction people and being like, let's build a building, if I don't know it's going to be around for in next year, then, you know,
sure. Yeah, like am I exactly.
And to be clear, to get the deduction, you have to meet certain standards, right? So what do I have to do to get the money, I guess, is the best way.
Yeah. At the time, what you had to do is you had to make sure that in comparison, there was a reference building, and the criteria had changed over the years. Every time they brought it back, they had adjusted the criteria, but sure. So which made it even more confusing to people didn't know really how to certify them. But basically, you know, you had to overall in the gist of it, you had to reduce your energy efficiency compared to a reference building. So you take a reference building from 2007, yours had to perform 50% better, anywhere from 25 to 50% better than that reference building from 2007. So it was based on 2007 ASHRAE standards, which okay. Back then, you know, that's pretty tough to do because you're talking about 2006, right? And you're saying, okay, so it was originally based on older standards and then came in 2007, and that kind of just stuck. Until the IRA, which they came at and they made it quite a bit more, you know, difficult to get. I would say after 2010, well, 2010, 20, 2008 to 2010, once we ended up getting those changes, it was kind of a no-brainer. It was like, if you built a building, you will qualify for 179D. You'll get the full amount. It made it pretty easy because now you're building buildings in 2010 or 12, and the standards for just building code were actually exceeding the 2007 ASHRAE standards.
Right, so you're building an energy efficient building either way, so you might as well fill out the form and get the free money, which of course, you know, the whole problem I have with this on some level is, you know, you want to have a governmental system which gives you a tax break to incentivize you. If they're just going to give it to you for just sort of like showing up, then it's, I'm not, you know, I mean, it's not really achieving anything. But other than, I guess, giving me money, which, don't get me wrong, I'll take the free money. I'm just pointing it out.
You're incentivizing what, right? I mean, it's like if this is kind of an, because really most people designing the buildings had no idea whether they would qualify for this or not. It was just a fluke and they had to do a study in order to prove that they actually got it. So there wasn't really any incentive like, hey, we're going to design to this bill so that we can meet these standards, you know?
By the way, as a side point, because we keep referring to the Inflation Reduction Act as the IRA, and of course we have global audience. I've been listening to some British commentators talking about like UK energy efficiency. And when they talk about us, they really go out of their way to say the Inflation Reduction Act. And one of them specifically made a point about, we're not calling it the IRA for obvious political reasons, which I found very amusing because, like, you know, it has other meanings. I'm just saying.
Yes.
But we don't have to worry about that here. But some of our listeners might be wondering why we're talking about the Irish Republican Army. So just saying.
Back to yes.
Yeah,
thank you.
That's a whole other kettle of fish, so to speak. So obviously the rules changed with the Inflation Reduction Act. So that was the old set of rules for 179D. What are the new rules? What do they look like now?
Yeah, the new rules are quite a bit more stringent. They did a lot of different things in the Inflation Reduction Act. So essentially what they did was they increased it from $1.80 per square foot. And there was some inflation type adjustments in there. So like for 2022, it was $1.88, right?
Sure,
so
CPI just, or whatever.
Yeah. So it was $1.80 per square foot. And they increased it in that Inflation Reduction Act to $5 a square foot max. Okay, so they increased it quite heavily.
Which sounds great.
In doing so, they also did away with just restricting it to HVAC, building envelope, and lighting. Now they've opened up to all building energy. So if you have solar and that reduces your energy uses, or if you have EV stations, or if you have other things that will contribute to the usage of your energy, then that is now a contributing factor. It's not just those three components.
So I find that interesting what you just said, because like insulation, that saves me money. Efficient lighting saves me money. I get that. EV chargers do not save me money. EV chargers are just
cost
EV chargers,
money.
Right? I mean, like, I'm now, right. I mean, assumedly the electricity would have been spent somewhere else. If I didn't spend it here, the guy will charge up his Tesla somewhere else. But like, I guess they just lumped that in. They just said, if you do chargers, we'll let you deduct it. Was that?
No. They're just saying they have to take that into account. So that's part of the modeling. Okay. So if they're using EV stations, but then they have solar, right? They're going to compare. We're going to look at everything coming into it.
You're looking at
so,
everything.
You know, if you have EV charging stations, it might drive your results down, right? Whereas if you have solar, it might help, you know, help that. But before it was really based on the usage, what it was set up. So for instance, like if you had HVAC system and or a lighting system, and that system was set up and it would at full capacity would use X kilowatts per hour or whatnot. And then you put controls on there. Controls aren't going to be a limiting factor because you can turn your controls off and you still have the building using a certain part of energy. So it came down to the usage, not how you're using it, if that makes sense. It's the capacity of use. And so all of that was taken into consideration.
Right, because usage matters. I mean, the fact that you could automatically power down your lights at night will save money. I mean, that's...
Right.
Okay, interesting. So on one hand, I love the fact that it was $1.80, now it's $5. That sounds like a win, but I'm sure there's a catch. So what is the catch?
There is a catch. So now they're required. So essentially, what they did was they rewrote the whole thing. They said, hey, we're going to give you up to $1 per square foot as a tax deduction.
Okay.
But if you meet a prevailing wage, so the people that you're hiring to do the work, building that building or whatnot, if they meet the prevailing wage criteria in that county, then we will multiply it by five. So you get the dollar per square foot, but then now what happens is if you do meet the prevailing wage criteria, they're going to give you an extra bonus and you'll get $5 a square foot
And that
instead
would
of
be the
$12.
prevailing wage on the people doing that work, doing like the electrical or something, or do I have to do prevailing wage for everybody who works on the building?
Everybody who works in the building. So it makes it a lot more
That's a lot.
difficult. You've got contractors, subcontractors, and you also have to meet, in order to meet the prevailing wage, you also have to meet the apprenticeship. So you have to make sure that, depending on how many people you've got also apprentices, and the apprentices are also being paid at a fair rate. Um,
Right.
so
So
it's
if I'm
it's
government, so I got ahead here. If I'm building a government building and I have to use union labor either way, fine, because whatever. But if I'm building non-union in a secondary tertiary market, which are the markets I've always worked in, no knock on union people, but I've never had to hire union people or pay prevailing wage because I'm working in suburban New Jersey in Class B apartment product. That's just not part of the conversation.
It tells you who is involved in the negotiating of that,
Yeah,
doesn't
no, I gotta see where this is major
Not
politics right
political or
there.
anything, but
No,
it's, you
I mean, it doesn't
know.
surprise me, but the Biden administration would put in something that was very pro-union. That's not a shocking statement. So,
Right.
yeah, not to get back to George W., but they probably wouldn't have done that under him. But nonetheless, okay, so it was around $2. It was $1.80. They went to five if you meet these conditions, and if you don't, it's $1, which isn't really a lot of money at the end of the day. I mean, a
It's
buck a
really
foot.
not, especially knowing that it's a tax deduction. It's not even a credit of a buck. It's a tax deduction of a
Right,
dollar
you're just
eight.
shifting it to the
Yeah.
beginning. I mean, so I build a
That's the point.
200,000 foot building and I time shift $200,000 depreciation. Like, I don't know if I'd notice it, frankly. It's not a large amount of money.
That's
And then
right.
no knock on you, but then I have to hire a service provider to go do the math and pay
That's
for
exactly right.
reports and all that kind of jazz.
That's exactly right.
I'm
So that's
not feeling very motivated here at this point, honestly.
exactly. But going back to our original discussion of, okay, getting something without planning for it versus plan for it. And then if you do this, then maybe we can have some additional,
Okay, fair
now
enough.
you actually have to plan for it. You're right. You kind of have to look at it. Now, going back to one thing you said about building a government building, right? If you're building a government building, having to use union labor, what's interesting about that is that if you are the government building a building, it could be federal, state, county, municipality, whatnot. Here's the interesting kicker. It's a tax deduction. The government doesn't pay tax. So they were not incentivized to build energy efficiently, except that's why Obama came out in 2015 and said all government buildings must be built to these standards. Okay.
Right.
Now, here's what's very, very interesting. So I don't know. I know your listeners probably are not in this field, but if you are an architect or an engineer, there was a provision in this Energy Policy Act of 2005 that said that if the building is owned by a government entity, okay, and you design the building to meet the energy efficient criteria,
Okay.
because they didn't want to leave the energy, they didn't want the government buildings to be left out of this. They wanted them to be energy efficient.
To have them
So
be part
if
of
you
it.
design the building and it meets this criteria, we will allow the government entity to allocate this deduction over to you as the designer.
Interesting. Interesting.
So this has been a
Huh.
huge benefit to, I would say in my experience of doing this since 2006, I would say in my experience in every city, there's three main architectural firms that design all the government buildings. They all know who
Sure,
they
they
are. They're
get the
the big enough. They
contracts.
can meet the criteria. And so basically those guys, and I've seen millions and millions and millions of dollars of tax savings incentivizing the architects and engineers for building these government buildings. We're talking schools, libraries, government buildings, city halls, training centers,
Which
universities.
is working into what they'll bid the job for, because if I know that $1 million of architectural work will get me X hundreds of thousands of dollars of tax breaks, That's fascinating.
Yeah.
That's not
Kind of
something I would have
interesting.
thought of. Yeah.
Yeah, kind of interesting. And then it wasn't until the Inflation Reduction Act that because back then we all knew that you if it's supposed to be non-taxable people that get it, like government, then that means nonprofits should also get it. Well, they were erroneously left out of the code. So you can't allocate if you're building a church or nonprofit or you're building on tribal land. You can't take the allocation, right? Only if it's government entity. Well, that was changed in the IRA bill. The IRA bill did include nonprofits, churches, schools, charter schools, the nonprofit,
All the
and
not-for-profit.
also tribal. So that was an increase in there. Now they can still allocate it today. So even under the IRA bills, as long as you meet the prevailing wage criteria and all the other things, and that building has been designed for a specific energy efficient. Now, what's interesting about that is that the architects and engineers, they understand how to build for those specs. And so they are the ones benefiting from this at a very large rate. And kudos to them for figuring it out and getting in there.
No, it's fascinating. I mean, generally, I think of architectural firms and engineering firms as being the least likely to get economic benefit out of anything, frankly. I mean, they're the service providers, and no knock on that as a discipline, but I usually don't think of them as getting tax breaks. Interesting, interesting. Okay, so that was fascinating, and that's really cool. So then, the other one to talk about, I think, though, is 45L. Right. So let's talk about that versus so 179D, it's a deduction. There's a benefit, but I understand kind of the issues. What's the deal with 45L?
45L was in the same Energy Policy Act, same expirations, same troubles with the temporary and whatnot, and
Got it.
ultimately landed on, and now it's a permanent tax credit, as well as the 179D. But I think those were made permanent in 2011, if I'm not mistaken,
Okay.
and that would have been under also Obama. And so those were made permanent, which we were grateful for that. Now the 45L is a little bit different. So I got to switch gears, right? The 45L is not a tax deduction, it's a tax credit. Okay, so it sits differently on the books. This
So
is
now we're actually
essentially
getting
like
extra money. We're
extra
not
money.
time shifting. We're getting money. Okay, got it.
You're actually offsetting your tax liability by the credit. Okay.
Got it.
So you're getting a tax credit dollar for dollar offset. You don't have to adjust it for depreciation or anything like that. So a dollar for
Beautiful.
dollar offset. Now, it originally started, it was a $2,000 tax credit per unit. Now,
Okay.
this is multifamily. So this is residential tax credit. Okay. So not switch gears. The other one was commercial. This one was residential. Remember in 179D, they were first started out saying if the 179D was four stories or more in manufacture or multifamily, then what was happening was the buildings that were three stories or less would qualify under 45L and not the 179D. So it was one or the other. Okay.
Got it. Okay,
So
that
if
makes
it was
sense.
more, it was multifamily more than three stories, it was 179D. If it was three stories or less, it's 45L. Okay, so
Got it.
now
Okay.
this qualifies to the owners, the developers who are building that garden style apartment complex, right? Three
Okay.
stories, no elevators, just walk-ups.
Yeah, typical.
So this was a $2,000 tax credit per unit for the units that now it's not completion. It goes by if these units were leased or sold. Okay. So basically this was more for, the developers who were building it. And as we had mentioned back in 2010, 11, when we had the crash, we had a lot of construction that sat idle and they didn't finish those multifamilies, until later. So they would not be eligible for getting the 45L until the units are either leased or sold. So you either have to sell the whole project off or you have to sell or lease the property and have a renter in there in order for it to qualify.
Got it.
Those are still the criteria. It does need to be either leased or sold by the time. So this is really more for developers of residential housing, multifamily. And it is a tax credit, so you have to go back and amend your tax return to get it, which means you're limited to the 3 year statute of limitations.
Got it.
Whereas
So
one seventy,
basically, if I'm building condos, when they're done and now they're sold, or when I'm building an apartment building and now they're leased, I got to file some paperwork so I can get the credit. Okay.
Right.
And to be clear, because we did say it's residential, but we're talking about multifamily here, obviously. We're not talking
mostly
about
multifamily. Yeah. Okay. I mean, it would be very difficult for a single family home to meet the criteria of a 45L. And not only that, but, you know, $2,000 tax credit plus your fees, it just doesn't make a lot of sense unless you're doing more than 20 units, you know.
Right. And single family homes, also, just to start with, they're just not energy efficient at the end of the day.
Right.
I mean, I live in a single family house and I love it, but I kid around that I have a house from the 1800s and I kid around that in the wintertime I'm heating a tent fundamentally. It's not an energy efficient style of living, but anyway.
Right.
Okay. So this is great. I mean, this is something you can plan for now because it's permanent. It's $2,000. That's not chump change. That in theory will pay for some improvements in terms of insulation or what have you. What happened so now the Inflation Reduction Act comes along. What does it look like after the Inflation Reduction Act?
So the changes that came in after the Inflation Reduction Act was that they also increased it from a $2,000 tax credit to a $5,000 tax credit. It's $1,000 if it qualifies for Energy Star certification. So that's the $1,000. But then if you have the Energy Star certification and you have the prevailing wage, it will multiply that $1,000 by five. And that's where you get the $5,000 per unit. Now, this could be extremely beneficial, right? This is a totally different topic. $5,000 per unit, you're building 100 units. That's pretty substantial as far as a tax credit. It's not a tax deduction, but the criteria has gone through the roof so much so that it's almost impossible to qualify for it. The Energy Star certification, a lot of people aren't spending the money on that. Energy Star certification is saying that you need, I think, the continuous rigid insulation. If you don't have that, and that means that you actually have to have site visits to prove that you had a certain type of insulation before drywall goes up. So this is one that you have to plan for. You can't just go in after the fact that it was built and say, oh, by the way, now I certify for Energy Star. It has to be an ongoing process.
Right. But we as an nation, not to get too into construction technology, we are moving towards exterior insulation, rigid continuous insulation, a lot of construction.
It's really not used widely in multifamily or residential. It's right. Mostly used in commercial space, which is a challenge.
Yeah. Not yet.
Not yet.
You know, I mean, that's the thing with a lot of these technologies is that, you know, it always feels to me of energy efficient type stuff. And I could run down a list of things. It's always like, you know, the Germans do it for like 10 years. And then after the Germans have done it for 10 years, we Americans are like, we could do that and save some money.
Imagine that.
Maybe they're onto something. So if I have any German listeners, I'd like to thank all of you for, you know, field testing all these technologies, working out the kinks so we dumb Americans can eventually get around to it. But, you know, it's interesting. I'm endlessly, again, I mean, a lot of the stuff I own and manage is, you know, older product where this is all, you know, I mean, we got steam heat in a lot of these buildings. So that's a whole other conversation. But it is interesting that there's an incentive for it. Okay, so right now what I'm hearing is 179D, if you're doing prevailing wage anyway, interesting.
No brainer.
45L, if you're doing something that's super energy efficient, great. And if you're not, or if you're doing multifamily, you're probably not doing it at all then. And that's that.
Yeah.
And that's that. Interesting.
That's about right.
Interesting. Now, what does the future look like for these credits? I mean, they're always tweaking the rules, right? So what do we, if we had to guess, what do we think happens with this stuff in the next, I don't know, 1 to 5 years? What happens? Because they're permanent, but they're always tweaking the rules.
They are tweaking them. I think it's going to depend on who becomes our president this year.
Fair enough.
I think you have an election year. I think it's going to be looked at. It may be changed. It needs to be changed at this point in time. It's almost impossible to get, so much so that what's the point in having a tax code if it's not achievable? And so it kind of just gives you that. You know, insight that, hey, you know, what do we do here? You know, what is this about? And, is it worth it, you know, to even keep it around? And they're going to find out very soon when they just don't have anyone filing for these, that it's just kind of a waste of time.
Right.
So I think there will be some modifications, especially on the 45L side. I do believe there's also going to be some changes on the 179D side. There are some caveats about when they started construction and if that counts, right?
Okay.
Yeah, so I think there will be some changes. This is one of those things. We are also, our company Engineer Tax Services is on the 179D Coalition, which, you know, discusses, you know, these types of challenges and any challenges that we're seeing in the market. We can feed those right up to Capitol Hill and get, you know, some of those comments then so that they have the ability to make the changes if they see fit.
Got it. Yeah, which and that's interesting talk. One of the reasons also it's fun to talk to you about this is because while you're doing this as a service provider, you're also doing this as someone who's communicating with people in government about what works, what doesn't, and how they need to adjust the rules, which, you know, in all fairness, government does their job, but, you know, they need to talk to stakeholders, and the stakeholders there are a lot of different people, right? It's not just people who are saying, let's burn less fossil fuels. It's people who do tax and need to implement the rules. I mean, it's everybody at the table.
Yeah, we've actually got, and for obvious reasons, the 179D being that, and because of the allocation to the designers, we actually confer very closely with the president of AIA, and they are very involved in this. And so we've got a lot of support to let them know, hey, this is what's working, this is what is not working. We also, as mentioned on your last call, I'm on the tax committee for the Real Estate Roundtable in Washington, D.C., the biggest real estate lobbying group, right? So this is not just a one-off somebody writing a letter, right? This is a big, big group with a lot of money that is really incentivizing some of these things, just like the unions, right?
for
the prevailing wage. Yeah. So a lot of groups of people coming together to make this actually, you know, work. And what is it designed for? What's the incentive? What's the government trying to achieve? And are we actually achieving it by using these deductions? The answer for 45L is no. And so we need to modify that for sure. So we know that there will be some changes coming.
No, it's interesting. I mean, people, you know, a lot of times they oversimplify conversations about democracy, but it's, having had some involvement in some of the processes you're talking about, not with you, but in similar processes, it's a lot of people, it's a lot of voices, and it also makes me thankful I did not go into government as a full-time job, because I'm glad someone's doing it, you know, but it's a lot of work. It's a lot of meetings and a lot of work, and that's cool that you're doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm not going to say it's charity work, because obviously it's related to your business, but, you know, it's a lot of unpaid work, I guess would be a good way of putting it.
And in our case, we're paying a pretty penny to make sure that we have lobbyists that help us and memberships to be a part of these groups. And,
sure.
It's fruitful, and it's necessary and it's important, but it's part of how government works. So.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, look, it's fun to talk about this stuff. I've heard about some of this stuff through other contexts, talking about renewable energy and tax credits through the renewable energy world. So it's definitely good to actually have this conversation vis-a-vis how it affects the commercial real estate industry. And we haven't touched at all, and we don't need to. I also know that with the Inflation Reduction Act, they put in a bunch of things for people who just are like, hey, I have a house, I want to upgrade my service panel, that sort of stuff. And I mention that just for listeners to understand that everything we're talking about is really for the development, large-scale development side of the world. But if, you know, you have a house and you just want to put in a heat pump, they got rules for you too. Not these rules, but they've got rules for you too.
Yep.
Cool. Well, look, thanks again for your time. I'm glad we went through this. And excellent. And I look forward to talking to you again when government decides to change the rules yet once again, which they seem to do with alarming alacrity. But we'll see what happens next time around. Thanks again, Kim. Much appreciated.
No problem, Josh. Thank you so much. And thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.